Welcome to Series 4 of My Life in Design, brought to you by the DBA and design-focused PR agency Red Setter. I'm Claire Blythe, co-founder of Red Setter. In this series, I'll be speaking to more people who are shaping the world of design, finding out how they discovered that design was a thing you could base a career around, and how they got to where they are today. This week, I'm here with Alan Dye and Nick Finney of NB Studio. Alan and Nick met as designers at Pentagram in the 90s and then went on to set up the brilliant NB Studio. They've worked on brands such as Royal Mail, the Kraken Rum, Vineyard Theatre in New York, Luxembourg Philharmonic Orchestra, did lots of Pernod Ricard, the V&A, Tate, and the list goes on. Alan and Nick, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you for having us. It's great to be here in Brighton on a sunny winter's day.
Yeah.
Autumn day.
It's a sunny autumn day.
No, thank you. It's lovely to be here. It's so nice getting off the train at Brighton from London. I could smell the popcorn. It's full of tattoos. I knew I was in Brighton.
That's definitely yeah. Brighton. Yeah. A bit of sea at the end of it. But yeah, popcorn and tattoos is definitely it. So, so can I ask you, sort of going right back to your youth childhood, when did you realise that design was a thing? When did you realise you could base a career around it and study it? Go on, Alan, you start.
Okay, that's a good question. So I'm going to go right back to the 1800s, to way back last century in the early 80s when I was in the fifth form of my secondary modern school in South East London, where my school was like a little bit of a holding pen, really. It was just there to hold 1,800 boys together. So it wasn't a kind of academic school. So I had absolutely no idea what I wanted to do at school. And like all me and my friends, we all kind of messed up our O-levels and had to retake. But that's probably the best thing I could have possibly ever done, because I went into the sixth form and took up our O-level as an extra, or GCSEs now, as an extra subject. And I met this amazing teacher called Mr. Lee Noble, I think he used to live in Brighton, and always used to wear grey.
Hold on, his name was Mr. Lee Noble?
No, not Bendover, Lee Noble.
Oh, sorry.
It's worth clarifying. Yeah.
No, he's called Mr. Lee Noble. And we could call him Lee, and suddenly he talked to us like, you know, grown-ups. And I end up getting all the other O-levels because I started studying art, but he actually introduced me to the world of art. And we didn't really do much art because he just talked to us about Frank Zappa. He took us to the Tate at the time. He taught us about photography and surrealism and gave you books like Hermann Hesse, Stephen Wolf and Catch 22. And I just thought this was fucking amazing.
Yeah.
It just really opened up my eyes to this world. And you know, then you go to double biology A level and it's just pure dictation and boring. So I just then gravitated towards the art college or the art block and just hung out there. And you know, he'd talk about his life traveling around the world and because he was at Brighton Art College in the 60s and
was
quite an old hippie guy and just wore grey because he thought, I can't wear colour at school because it's a very monosyllabic type of place, really.
Yeah,
and he was just grey. And yeah, because of him was my crossroads into picking up what art was all about.
That's brilliant.
So, I remember the night before my biology A-level, I'd already got into Ravensbourne. I remember just thinking, oh, fuck this. This is my epiphany moment. Chuck the book out the window and just, I don't think I even bothered, you know, doing it. Or, you know, I'm off to art college now. Sod this.
Yeah, you don't need it.
Don't need it.
Yeah.
So I think it was because of that one person that is the reason why I'm sitting here now.
Yeah, that's
sitting next to Nick.
That's it. It's always about having that one special person that just ignites the whole thing,
isn't
it?
Absolutely, totally, total inspiration.
Did you have a similar thing, Nick? Was it about one person or was it?
Oh, God, I've got to go right back. What did I do? So the original.
He didn't know anything until he met me.
No, Alan discovered me on the streets.
Basically
took me under his wing.
And became his pimp.
Before we met, I was born in Catford, grew up in Wales. You know, my parents moved to Wales and I grew up there. And they wanted to get out of London. My dad was a school teacher and he wanted to get out of. He taught in Tulse Hill School. And he was a science advisor. And he moved to Wales, built a house by himself with my mum. Both of them sort of needed plaster and bricks and all that stuff, while me and my brother played in the Welsh landscape. I didn't know what design was, but I loved all the things that boys love, comics, with all the free gifts and the badges and books and the smell of paper and ephemera and Dennis the Menace and Nasher and the Dennis the Menace fan club and all the magic of paper and all that sort of stuff. So, and I also love to then start to copy all that stuff. And then you get older and you get into records and all that sort of stuff. And then I went to school, did pretty badly. I didn't have the same experience at art at school. I thought I didn't really get on with art because they just wanted me to be messy, and I wanted to draw comics and use very, really thin pens.
Interesting. Okay.
Stuff. And so it wasn't really encouraged. It didn't feel like that was encouraged. They wanted me to be Giacometti or. And I certainly got an education in fine art through school and college. So anyway, I left school. I had 2 O levels and I did resits and I got 5 altogether. So it wasn't brilliant. But then, it was obviously art, English, and then some other stuff.
But it shows that you don't have to be getting AA stars throughout to set up a really successful business.
No one's ever asked how many O levels you've
got. Me too.
No.
I've got 11, by the way. Resit.
That's very impressive.
Now I've got 117.
But it's true, no one ever asks what level of degree I've got. It's a form which is actually quite a good thing.
And it's a form of measurement. It's not necessarily helpful, because at that time you're going through your teenage years where you're mostly concerned with how you look and how you appear to other people.
Yeah.
And whether or not you can get hold of somebody, as a boy at that age, I'm sort of going into girls and music and you're trying to find your way in the world.
Yeah, create your own identity almost.
And tell us everything you remember about all the really boring things we've told you. And that's the exam. And it's like,
oh, osmosis. Tell me all about osmosis.
So I ended up leaving school, went on a YTS scheme where I got paid 25 quid a week. And they said, what do you want to do? And I said, I want to work in a bike shop because I was into cycling. And so they put me in a bike shop and I had to mend punctures and I was just stuck in the back of this oily room wearing an oily rag. Mending people's punctures, and I thought that I'd be front of house selling bikes and talking about bikes, and no such thing. I was just I had to listen to Terry Wogan and Radio 2, which I hated.
BMXer.
Yeah, exactly. And I was just putting these cheap bikes together and I hated it. And I sort of, when I had my YTS assessment, they said, how did you find that? And I said, can I do something else? And they put me at Burton's Menswear, where I worked my way up. My job was basically to stop people stealing jeans. Because people used to just run in. And this was in Shropshire.
You used to wear Burton clothes at Pentagram.
No, I didn't. I wore bespoke suits.
I remember that baby pink jumper.
Oh, God. It was blue, but it was baby blue.
Four sizes too small. I still have that
style.
Oh, God, do you remember the Burton style?
It's
man from Burton's.
I mean, yeah. So what did I learn there? I learned that I didn't want to do that for the rest of my life. And actually, I started hanging around with some friends. I moved out of my parents' house and moved into the town. I had a girlfriend. And then sort of one day I just, with my friends, they were sort of, you're brilliant at drawing and stuff. Why don't you get all your drawings together and apply to college? And my parents were the same thing. My dad was saying, you're great at drawing. Why didn't you design greetings cards? And I thought, no, I'll go to college. So,
but at least he knew that that was a thing.
Yeah, absolutely.
And actually realised you can make some money out of it and didn't just say, you'll be a penniless artist, don't be so silly.
Yeah. That's a bit of insight. Yeah, yeah, exactly. And so I just, I turned up at the college with a portfolio of what I thought I needed to take, some T-shirts that I designed and some drawings and sketches and things that I thought were posters, and they accepted me. And it was a sort of BTEC foundation at SCAT, which is Shrewsbury College of Art and Design.
Yeah.
And I, some of the exercises they had us do were things like get a paper plate and stick some pasta on it. And, it was a proper foundation course.
Yeah.
And I learned a lot about fine art, but I didn't really enjoy the all of the process. But then they took me into one side and said, you should be a graphic designer. And so we think you should apply to these sorts of places. So I went on a tour with my mates of some of the colleges around the UK, which was a brilliant laugh. And I went to Hull, Somerset. What's the one down? Falmouth.
Yeah.
Probably Birmingham. Probably and a few others. Yeah. Like, all that sort of stuff. And I sort of thought, right, Somerset's the one. It was littered in awards. It was in a small town. It wasn't in London, because I thought, if I go to London, I'll become a heroin addict. So I basically ended up...
It's not a bad idea to stay out of London.
I should probably shut up now, because I'm just wanging on about my life and stuff.
Well, yeah, but this is the point.
I forgot what the question was.
How did you realise it was a thing that you could base a career around? And how did you get started in the whole thing? So
I think it was that moment when the tutors took me to one side and said, your work is really... sort of tight. You don't really enjoy mark making. You don't really enjoy the process. You know, we think you should be in the commercial field, in graphic design.
Okay.
And then they started showing me what that meant.
So could you spot the idea generation involved in the whole thing, basically,
I think so, but I think I was just obsessed with making things look neat and tidy.
See,
that's different to me. I had a moment at school in this art block where I just thought, this is a 24-hour job. You know, this art's not just doing your art A-level or one painted. It's all around you. You know, it's everything you see. It's a way of life. It's, you know, it's about all your senses coming together. And I had this little moment, and I really liked that. I mean,
definitely.
Ollie, one of our head designer, calls it a curse. You know, you can walk into a restaurant or a bar and, you know, the floor could be wrong, or the ambient lighting could be wrong, or the tablecloth could be wrong, or the chairs could be wrong, or it could all be beautiful and right. It's more than just about the food. It's the whole...
Oh, my God, definitely.
The whole feel of the place. And I think that's, for me, that's what branding is all about. You know, you can do a beautiful logo, but actually, if you haven't got the brand or the feel of the place, that's wrong. So it kind of happened to me when I was at school. But in my...
Do you realise that as a thing while you were...
Yeah, when I was doing this
A-level.
That's
interesting.
But then, you know, we my particular area, which was Bromley, you could... I had to apply to Ravensbourne. So it wasn't a general foundation. So you had to choose what you wanted to do.
Yeah, okay.
So you had to go into fine art or graphics or product or whatever you wanted to do. And I wasn't a fabulous drawer, you know. In fact, we didn't really do much drawing at my art A-level, because I was listening to Mr. Lee Noble talk about his travels around America and Jamaica and Frank Zappa, which I learned a lot about.
That does sound very cool.
You know, but I got the art A-level, and so I chose graphic design, and it's a completely different process then, you know. So it was only 30 kids they would take on to do the design course at Ravensbourne.
Yeah.
And that was probably one of the most intense years of my life. It was absolutely...
So it's just a one-year foundation.
It was completely intense, 5 days a week, probably 10 hours a day.
Yeah.
Loads of homework, so much work, and it was incredible, and it was amazing. It was old school.
Brilliant.
And it was fabulous. And Ravensbourne was like a kind of Bauhaus-y type of place. It felt that way.
Okay.
You know, so you did colour theory, you did photography. There was a lot of drawing and perspective, and it was just fantastic place to do it.
But
then you kind of mingled with all these other kids. And, you know, you go to Ravensbourne thinking, yeah, I'm kind of okay. But you get there and you think, oh, my God, there's so much talent in this place.
Yeah.
And already you're kind of whittling out people who don't want to do this. You know, so you go to this place full of brilliant, brilliant, talented students who are incredible. And then you meet all the girls in the fashion department, or all the boys in the product design, or the crazy fine artist. And it was a really proper old school.
Yeah.
Art college. So then I went on to Maidstone.
Oh, okay. So you didn't stay there for...
No, it's just my foundation. Mm-hmm. And because I really loved advertising. I think both Nick and I feel the same about that. And they had an advertising course there, which they then weirdly closed down. But we still did it as part of the course.
Yeah.
Which I'm glad I did. Specialised in graphics. And Maidstone was very much the same. It was a proper art college at the time, with fine arts, sculpture, illustration, photography, TV, graphic design, and everyone kind of mixed together.
Yeah.
And that's what I loved about these places. You know, if you wanted a piece of illustration doing, I'd go and talk to one of my mates in the illustration department and buy him a pint if he did a drawing for me. Or if I needed to do some packaging, I'd talk to one of the sculptors and get him to help me with a shape. And people kind of thought that was a bit lazy, but I just thought this was clever art direction.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I'm only good at doing this, but actually you're really good at doing that.
Which is essential, you know, to working in an agency.
Yeah, you know,
definitely.
It's that 1+1=3. You put things together and you're going to get something better. And when you become a creative director, it's all about spotting the best talent, whether it's a copyright photographer, an illustrator, and bringing them in to one project. And
absolutely.
Then you can orchestrate that and you're going to get something better. So I think that's what we do at MB, really. We're quite redundant now. you and you, get on with it.
We might be after this podcast.
So where did you study at your college? How long were you there for, Nick?
So I did 2 years at Shrewsbury, got distinction, and then went to an HND in graphic design in Somerset.
Right.
Did RHEL. And that was a great experience. I mean, the first year was sort of, as Alan's kind of described, there was a lot of sort of hand rendering typography with tracing paper, but I was mostly concerned with what everybody else was doing and spotting the talent and all the same sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
That it's because it's competitive, because I wanted to do well. That's the entire thing for me. It was like, right, I need to buck up my ideas. Mm-hmm. And look at that thing that kid's done. You can collaborate, but also it's you're getting ready for the real world out there.
And,
I guess I was like, I wanted to do well. I wanted to prove to myself and my mum and dad and my friends that I hadn't wasted this opportunity. So same thing, late nights, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And then the second year was teaching through embarrassment. So it's like rapid briefs, crits, get the work up on the wall. Right, whose is this? That is terrible. You know, there's all that sort of stuff.
Yeah. We did the same at NB, you know, it's all up on the wall.
Mostly with Alan's work.
three out of ten see me.
But, set the bad ones on fire, that kind of stuff.
Big bonfire at the end of the day. But Maidstone was the same. Every 2 weeks you get a project and you had 2 weeks to do something and then you had to stand up and front.
Two weeks? We were given 2 hours.
Oh, come on. Well, normally you can come, if you haven't got it in 2 hours, you're just pissing around, aren't you? You know, so you always had to then stand up in front of 30 kids and present your work.
Yeah.
And, you know, you had to do it. You know, it was always the night before. You stayed up all night. What was amazing, there was so much great competition. You know, your friends who I still talk to daily who loved what they were doing. It was a lot of healthy competition, or you'd do a job with someone. And it was always lovely to stand up and present because you wanted to be the best.
Yeah, I like that ethos. What was the process in looking for a job? How did you, did you get a job straight after?
Well, when I graduated, it was 1990. My God, it seems like yesterday. It was bang in the middle of a recession.
Yeah.
I remember we all graduated, the teacher said, you might as well just go travelling because no one's going to get a job. Everyone's going bust. Thanks.
Did they actually say that?
Yeah.
Wow.
It was a she, actually. and she wasn't wrong. It was a really tough time in 1990.
Yeah, it really was.
I don't think people can remember that now, but it was an awful time. And, you know, I think 80s graphic design had a big heyday, you know, that's when it became to the forefront.
Yeah.
And it was quite tough, but I used to, I just remember walking the streets of London. I had a little notebook.
Have you seen the old man?
I used to use, you know, red phone box, you know, put loads of 50p's in and just ring up everybody and try and get interviews or go and see people. And I did.
But that in itself is a really good thing to do.
Yeah.
Because now I'm just getting in touch.
Yeah, you just
speak to loads of people.
Fuck it, sod it. You know, I just want to get and see people. I remember doing a little bit of freelance at more phone ins. I did a weekly worm packaging at Design Bridge. I don't know what the hell I was doing. And then my first proper job was at the BBC the February afterwards.
Yeah.
I think I worked on a building site with a few of my mates from Arcot and paid off the overdraft.
I never knew you did Wiggly Worms packaging.
Yeah, it's great. I don't think they use my stuff. Just the worms. So then I had a job at the BBC.
That's a pretty good place to start.
Yeah, no, it was great. In fact, I went to this interview with this guy called Tom Brooks, who ended up being my brother-in-law, but that's another story. He said, look, you know, we've met laying loads of people off. Go and see the print people, because he worked in TV stuff, which I really wanted to do at the time. And had an interview there, which was quite a funny interview. I remember when I was at Maidstone in the first year, I was in the lecture theatre and they were talking about typography and pikers and rulers and how to kind of do leading and all this stuff. The stuff that you had to do before Apple Macs were there.
And
I just remember sitting at the back in this dark room thinking, oh, fuck me, I didn't come to art college to do maths. Sneaking out the back door and, you know, and thinking this is going to bite me in the arse one day. And my very first proper interview was with this woman at the BBC, and she locked me in this little room with a pike rule and all these coloured pencils and this brochure to mark up to copy fit it.
Yeah.
I thought, it's just hit me in the arse, hasn't it? Because I've got absolutely no idea how to mark up this brochure. How to cast off, you know.
Yeah.
It's a piker. God. And I just went, oh, Jesus. So I came out in this cold sweat. That was solid. I'll just tell the truth. Had my hand on the door to let her know that I couldn't do this. And the fire alarm went off.
You set the alarm off, didn't you?
No, I didn't set the alarm off, but the fire alarm went off. Anyway, she dragged me down the stairs, you know, outside the BBC. I met all the other designers and kind of had a chat while the fire alarm was being sorted out.
Oh, my God, that's good luck.
And she said, well, you probably know how to do that anyway. I said, yeah, of course I do. It's a piece of piss. Anyone can do that, you know. No idea. She saw my portfolio. I got the job and quickly learned how to copy fit.
And how about you, Nick? How did you get into employment? What's the...
What did I do? I left college. So I did work placement. What do you call it now? Internship.
Yeah.
Which is like an American... We never used to call it internship, did we? It was called...
Free labour.
You're in placement.
Yes, free labour is a lot of it. Surely no one does free internships anymore. But then it was pretty commonplace, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Which is a bit rubbish because you got to...
I think I was paid. And I got...
That's good.
A job in Soho at a place called Workhouse with a guy called Chris Bain, who designed with Martin Lambinen the Channel 4. He worked for Martin Lambinen. Workplace were above, were in the same offices. And I think they used to work together. So he worked on the Channel 4 stuff with Martin Lambinen. And they were doing lots of packaging and stuff for Boots and annual reports. And so I spent a month or two there, which I loved because I was in Soho.
Yeah, in Soho.
Record shops and comic shops and all, you know, just fantastic. And then I remember going out with the team and meeting other design agencies and thinking, they're all wearing black polo necks with leather jackets and Blundstone boots and they've got turn-ups and they all look the same.
I'm still wearing Burton's clothes.
Well, I've got my Burton's. I'm still wearing a suit. My school uniform. I felt like a country.
My Clark's commando shoes.
Anyway, long story short, they offered me a job at the end of the term. But I also, we had our final year show in Somerset and then in London, which was brilliant because obviously Somerset's quite a long way. So they brought the team, they brought the class to London and it was at the top of the Imagination Gallery in London.
Okay, yeah.
Designed by, can't remember his name, that's terrible. But a beautiful structure and beautiful building, and Howard Brown came along.
Our second office was next to that.
Yeah. So Store Street. We eventually it sort of came full circle and we had an office next door. I mean, it wasn't quite so posh and didn't have a lift, so I had to walk up four flights of stairs. But anyway, so at the top of the Imagination building, there used to be a gallery. I don't know whether there is anymore, a sort of big meeting space gallery. And we had our work up on boards, and this guy handed me his card and said, come and see me if you want to. And I sort of thought, I've got no idea who you are. And obviously in those days, you didn't have the internet.
Yeah, you can't just research it that easily.
So I sort of asked my tutor, and he said, well, he's Howard Brown. I think he used to work at Pentagram. He's a brilliant designer. He does stamps for Royal Mail and blah. And so I was sort of weighing up, and I thought, he said, look, just go and see him. And so I went to see him, and he worked on his own in his house in Chiswick. And he had a sort of an office in his house, and I went there, and he just had all the same music that I loved, all the graphic novels that I loved, all of the ephemera that I loved, and I thought, yeah, I don't want to be doing Boots packaging anymore. I want to be doing this, and so that's what I did. And my mates had got jobs at Saatchi's and stuff, and I sort of tapped them up and slept on sofas and all that sort of thing until I found my own place and cycled to Chiswick from Tooting and things like that. So
decent journey.
Yeah, exactly. So it was great fun, and so that was my first job, was with Howard, and I learnt, well, he used to sort of brief me and then go off and play tennis and things like that, because he just had a really lovely leisurely life, but also he worked really hard. But he taught me about, I was thinking about it, he taught me economy. So economy of design. So he handed me a brief, and it was like, okay, so we do all this work for Zelda Cheetle Gallery. The logo is a tiny little Z. I do these lovely little cards, and just a little A5 card, and I want you to typeset in the style of the things that I've been doing, the next invite. And so I went, and he said, the typeface is Helvetica. And so I thought, oh, this is a piece of piss. And I sort of typeset it all, stretched it all. You know, I thought, he's going to be so impressed. used about a million different versions of Helvetica, thinking, he's going to love this. And he came back and sort of semi-bollocked me, really. And I sort of learned a lesson that was, did you not look at the stuff that I'd done? It was effectively his story. So I learned about economy of, you know, actually, he taught me how to take things back to basics, strip away everything, and start with what's most necessary.
Yeah.
And I thought that's a vital thing in design anyway, is to strip back to basics and then build on from that.
We always think it's a lot of hard work to make something appear simple.
Definitely. Cut paper in half. So the economy was also, don't use A4 sheets when you can use A5 sheets of paper and turn the paper over. So he was quite into sustainability in those days. But he worked on Royal Mail stamps, the beautiful map stamps. He'd done all this beautiful work.
I was going to say, Harold Brown did the most beautiful set of stamps, the Ordnance Survey set.
Yeah.
And he just took one place in England and just used that same place over the years and see how it built up.
Yeah.
Kind of pastoral land to motorway, whatever it was now. But I just remember them being absolutely stunning set of stamps. So goddamn simple.
Yeah.
Such a beautiful idea.
So I was like his apprentice, really, for about a year. And then about just before Christmas, he called me up and said, I haven't really got any work for you. And I thought, and then the bottom fell out of my world. It was like, oh, God, that's it. That's my career in graphic design gone.
Yeah.
Because he'd gone a bit quiet and I was, you know, paid a certain amount a week as a sort of freelancer, really. And I, you know, we said, well, you pay me a bit to rent the desk kind of thing. I remember thinking, that's it, it's over. And then in January, he would call me back up and said, I still haven't got any work, I'm afraid. And I thought, oh, God, I know. And he said, but Vince Frost is looking for a designer at Pentagram. So if you want to go and work there, why don't you go and take your portfolio? I've told him all about you. And so I went over and got a job at Pentagram, where I met my wife, Alan.
Absolutely.
Yes, my husband, Nick Finney. Because I was at the Beeb for a bit, which I loved. It was so old school. But it was a great place. We used to do all the invites for the parties. I mean, and we just had to go and present to Alan Yentop and people like that. It was really great. You had one of these little passes. And I used to wander around the BBC and watch all this stuff going on. And quite dysfunctional. I remember designing the logo for the organisation. It was full of all these internal organisations in the BBC. I think I designed the logo that made me redundant at the end of the day. But then I got a job at Roundel.
John
Bateson and Brian Edmondson, who I met on the very first day and still really good friends with them. And John got me into the typo circle later.
I see.
And I think that was doing the reduction, because it was all about beautiful, simple typography at the time. And they were just coming on the back of all that beautiful stuff they were doing for Ralph Ray and the trains. And so we kind of got stuck into that stuff.
So did you go from Roundel to Pentagram?
Yeah, well, it was still that recession time. So I think Brian and I joined on the very first, well, we joined together. He thought I was a girl, actually, when he first met me.
Did he?
Yeah. I had long, it was kind of the early 90s, 91 or two, and I had long dark hair and white jeans on, as a designer would do.
Clearly rocking it.
Clearly rocking it, you know, like now. And I was sitting on this high chair, and he walked in and he went, hello, love. And I turned around and went, all right, Brian. And we've been friends ever since.
Excellent.
But, you know, it was still the recession, and 9 months later, I got made redundant with Brian from Roundel, which is a real shame. It's first in,
fair enough.
Last in, first out, but Roundel were just literally opposite Pentagram, got an interview there and was offered a job, which was great. But then Roundel offered me my job back because someone had left, but I thought, no, I'm off to Pentagram,
definitely.
And I thought Pentagram was kind of this, I had this impression that everyone had their top button done up and it was quite Germanic and quite Dick's undoing his top button now, and it was all stiff and proper. And I got there and I thought, you know, because you walk into this beautiful place. This is how design is really done.
It is beautiful.
And, you know, they had this tray with Alan Fletcher, Peter Saville, Theo Crosby, Kenneth Grange, David Hillman,
wow,
John McConnell. They had all these masks and you felt like you were in a kind of internal, I don't know, botanical zoos. Had all these lovely hanging plants and it's beautiful, yeah, beautiful, beautiful, beautiful place. And you think, oh, this is really scary.
Yeah, yeah.
And you realise actually everyone was wonderful and it was like a big party place, wasn't it?
That's brilliant.
It was so much fun. But you used to work really, really, really hard.
Yes.
And, you know, it was a wonderful, magical place. I think Nick and I always referred to it at the time as our apprenticeship.
Yeah.
You know, because you really did absolutely everything from, I remember working on Granada Motorway Service signage system for all the signs around the UK, external and internal, as well as doing Faber book covers.
Yeah.
Or whatever you were doing at the time.
It's really good training.
And it was a wonderful training.
Yeah.
And you just meet the best people, the best illustrators, the best photographers,
yeah,
the best copywriters. And you worked with the, you know, gods of design at the time. And it really was what Nick was saying about just taking it back, getting it down to the essence of what a brand or design should really be. And I think we've always taken that with us into the world of NB.
Yeah.
Because it had all those big names and they were all individuals, weren't they? And then they had visiting, you know, the US partners would come over and then they would have people like Saul Bass visit and you'd go to a talk by Saul Bass or Milton Glaser. And we were just really lucky and really privileged to be there.
I'd love to have seen them, yeah.
And as Alan said, we worked our asses off. I remember one bank holiday during the Notting Hill Carnival going into work.
Yeah, I did as well.
Yeah, and jerk chicken and working.
Bank holiday Monday.
I do remember it's your own self-drive that does that to you. I don't think they ever asked us. Well, actually, that's not true. I was going to say they didn't ask us to work late, but my boss did quite a lot.
It's a different work ethic at the time, though. Yeah.
We worked for different bosses. Yeah. Our chairs backed onto each other.
Right, okay.
And everyone's really...
We kissed when nobody was looking.
Yeah, over the cutting mat.
It's a sweet story.
over the cow gum that you actually had to make yourself. That's really...
What, by squishing a cow?
Yeah, it was really flammable, yes.
They were a bit anti-spray man because it's not very good for you. And that was the way we used to work. You know, in those days, we'd be putting work together last minute for a pitch that my boss or your boss would go off to with all of these things, all of these boards under their arm, foam board. And we used to use spray mat when nobody's looking, but they sort of came down like a ton of bricks when they realised.
Good that they did, actually. Well, I used to work in places where they had these big booths for spray mat, and it did stink, didn't it? It's not good for you.
And your hair was...
Yeah.
All the hair on my arms stuck together.
Yeah, I remember.
It's one of my first jobs. When I got there, JR, my boss, John Rushford, said, right, you're on secondment to another designer who used to work here, who's working on the Polaroid account, which I've got. And he's putting together this brochure. Can you go and help him? I thought, yes, he trusts me to go and design. And I went there and he was like, right, can you take all of these pages and spray mount this giant book together? And so I was out on this windy basement of the piano factory. It was like John Powner from Atelier.
Oh, yeah.
And it was like, oh, God, I felt really, okay. And suddenly you know your place and you've got to work your way up from cutting your fingers off by cutting foam board to blah, 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 blah. And eventually, I think I was there about 6 years.
To be honest, NB started in the pub next door.
So that's where you started discussing NB. The
cock and bottle next door, beers and fags,
and
talking design and doing work. Or we used to use the pub phone as our little...
Did you?
Our office phone. I remember we went off to do a presentation. Do you remember that Esker job? And
people
wore kind of suits and thought we were really cool. And then we changed the Notting Hill underground toilets back into, I don't know, jeans or something to go back into work. So we used to use the phone next door in the pub as our little office phone. And we used to know the landlord because we were there most nights, really, to be honest. And... our crap pentagram checks always used to bounce. And say, I know where you guys are.
I don't think I went into design so that I could run a business. I never went into design to run. And when we started NB, I wanted to win awards. I wanted to prove to myself and to others that I was good.
Yeah.
And I think so did you and so did Ben, really. We were really, and then it took us a while to figure out you need to focus on some of the other stuff too, like
paying the rent.
Yeah.
Yes.
Paying the rent.
Yeah, important.
Paying people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm.
So when did you start getting more serious about it? And
like, well, we haven't.
No. No. Do you know anyone?
Yeah. We need,
do you know anyone?
Well, 25 and a half years later.
Do you remember our first accountant didn't actually do any accounts for about 2 years? And God. He just used to smoke. He used to meet us in a cafe and just smoke. And we'd go, yeah, how's it going? And he'd go, yeah, no, it's all fine, don't worry. And then we'd go away. And then we found out that he didn't do anything. And Ben's...
He just told me it was all fine. Yeah. Oh, my God.
And then we had to be rescued, really, by I think Ben's Lucy had an accountant or something. But it was... Yeah, we were pretty
naive
when it came to the finances of the business.
Yeah.
Because our focus was doing great work.
Well, yeah, exactly. But you need to be able to charge the right levels and get the money in. And
but you learn how to do that.
Yeah.
I mean, we never had project managers and probably for the first 10 years at NB.
Yeah,
so
okay.
You ended up doing absolutely everything from project managing it to designing it to selling it to... doing the invoicing, to chasing the invoices, to do absolutely everything.
Yeah.
To run a company.
It's good skills to have.
Yeah, I mean, we've forgotten a lot of it now, but at the time you were in it.
Yeah.
And you didn't know you were in it.
Mm.
You were just doing it and making it happen.
Yeah.
But also having a damn lot of good fun as well at the time.
So how did you get your first clients? How did you continue getting clients?
Well, that's a really good question. We're still trying to learn that.
Yeah, fair enough.
Well, no, we're lucky. The first client was Noel.
First big client. The first real client was Ben's dad. And,
yeah, and that's
then,
a good start.
And then Ben's sister knew somebody at Polygram.
Which is Universal now.
Yeah, okay.
And so we did some film posters. And
there was a guy... called Tom Lloyd, yeah. Who left Pentagram. He was in Daniel Vile's team, product designer.
Yeah.
Set up Pearson Lloyd, who was still amazing and still going strong today.
Yeah, yeah.
They needed an identity and they got the Noel account. And we ended up working with Noel.
They were designing systems furniture, office furniture with Noel, which was fantastic for them. And we got to produce the brochure, yeah. And we were so naive. I remember calling up some guys that I'd seen some work at the Royal College of Art, and I'd seen, I think Ben and I had gone along, or you'd come along, and we'd seen him do some fantastic, what are they, photograms, but full size, like of a BMX bike and stuff, and we're just obsessed. So we just did photograms on the cover of this furniture. And we paid them about $2,000 at the time. I think we were only getting paid like three for the whole thing. It's like, what are you doing, you idiots?
Well, yeah, you need to go through that too.
Yeah,
that'd be a Photoshop button now, wouldn't it?
Yeah, completely.
Donk, donk.
Yeah.
When did you get your first studio? When did you actually move into your own place?
First place was Ben's kitchen table, and it sort of grew from there. And then we had to move out. You know, we had one Mac, and then we shared it, and then we then got another one, and then it just got too much for Ben's household, so we moved out and shared with an office with a friend of ours who was from Pentagram, an architect called Arthur Collin, who's a lovely Australian guy.
Yeah, he was doing this thing called Seattle Coffee Company at the time, which was coffee was just coming in, and then I think one of the big coffee chains bought it.
So Starbucks.
Starbucks, and he did all the same shops again, but for Starbucks. So we had a table there, didn't we?
We had two desks and three stools, and then we took on our first employee, and he had to share a stool.
No, but we've worked on so many different genres over the years, from education to culture to Pernod Ricard, you know, to the booze industry. And we've worked all around the world. You know, we've been working in Ghana recently.
Oh, wow,
which
really?
Is interesting.
Do you get to go over there?
Yeah, yeah. We've been working in New York on the theatre company. So
the travel opportunities within design.
Yeah, it's all about solving problems, you know, whether it's working when we used to work with Mothercare or University of Oxford. It always starts off with a blank sheet of paper.
Yeah,
and appropriating good ideas or commissioning your heroes. Like we commissioned Ivan Chmielev.
Oh, that's cool.
To do all our beautiful mother care posters at the time.
Wow.
Which was incredible. Then art directing Ivan many years ago.
Yeah.
Because we were so beautifully naive that why can't we commission Ivan Shamayoff to do our posters for us?
Yes.
Or our campaign for mother care.
But I think that's what we learned at Pentagram, yeah. I think, is aim high.
Yeah.
You know, we were already high. We were at Pentagram and
saw the cow gone.
And I did have this. Yeah. I remember thinking to myself, I sort of want to go from here because I've been here 6 years and nothing's happening and I want to go. But there's nowhere I really want to go and work.
Mm.
And
it's pretty unemployable when you leave Pentagram.
Yeah, I can imagine. So you're already at the top of the
game. Yeah, I mean, I tried a few places and it was just an absolute fucking disaster, you know, that I went on to.
Oh, yes, it's setting up on your own.
I got sacked. It was absolutely useless at these places.
Yeah.
You know, hands up, completely admit it. I just thought this place is run badly. It's disorganized, or I don't like the way it's the process. You know, you couldn't ring up your photographer, or you couldn't ring up a photographic agency, or you couldn't ring up your copywriter, or you couldn't ring up whoever, your printer. You had to go through a process.
Yeah.
So you weren't that person doing it. And at Pentagram,
really
you were the person who worked with the copywriter, the printer, or the Magnum, you know.
Yeah, that makes sense.
You know, at certain places you weren't allowed to do that, and it just seemed backward, or you had to ask permission to do that.
Yeah.
I think at Pentagram, you know, you were trusted to do that process.
Yeah.
And that's what made it magical. And as Nick said, we always aimed high.
Yeah.
So if you wanted Ivan Shamayoff to do an illustration, ring up Ivan Shamayoff.
Yeah, I love that.
Or you want a poet to do some beautiful work, let's ring up a poet.
Yeah.
You know.
You're more in control of it.
It was the kind we got to do mother care. Anyway, you know, so we'd ring up someone really famous to write some beautiful poetry, Roger McGough. So let's ring up Roger McGough to do some poetry for mother care. You know, why not?
Yeah.
It's going to come up from a different angle.
Yeah, definitely. I was thinking about how you keep yourself inspired, or how do you inspire yourself as designers? Do you think that's...
Nick Finney.
Yeah, that was going to say the same.
Yeah. Nick looks in the
mirror
every morning.
That's it, just Nick.
I think curiosity, you know, as a designer, is inbuilt in you.
Just curiosity of the world around you.
Yeah, and just everything. You know, you can look, don't want to get too poetic about it, but you can look at the sky and think, well, I'm getting inspired by that. Or, the MB team are incredible, you know.
Yeah, absolutely.
We've always employed people better than ourselves. And they're just inspiring. They're just a magical bunch of brilliant people around
us.
Yeah,
I love
that. They inspire us every day.
Yeah.
And once you get that team working, it's like an orchestra or a football team. Everyone's playing their own little
part. Yeah, definitely.
And when it comes together, you know, it works really, really lovely. I actually got inspired with the toilets at... it sounds weird, but the toilets at... Victoria, this morning, I missed the train waiting there, needed to go to the toilet. When I used to wait there as a kid going back home, it was a really grotty, dry, horrible place.
They've done enough, haven't they?
Wow, these toilets, they look fucking amazing.
Yeah.
The tiling is incredible. This is brilliant.
Hotel.
Yeah.
It does. It's pretty amazing.
You know what I mean? I thought,
totally. It's quite amazing toilets there.
Yeah, then I was just sitting there daydreaming, thinking I was in that Kingfisher movie, you know, watching everyone move around and just thought everyone was kind of suddenly dancing.
The Fisher King.
And then this bloke walked past and broke my daydreaming and went, oh God, I just can't go to the gym today. That's the worst thing ever. I thought, oh, you sad person. I better get on the train and do this interview.
Yeah,
you know, so
absolutely.
I think you find inspiration all around you
just
every day.
You. Yeah, personally. I like that. Have you got any tips for juniors today? Apart from stay away from the founders' drinks trolleys.
No.
Get
to the partners' drinks
get
trolleys.
Get to the trolley, yeah.
Yeah, and become part of the gang.
Yeah.
Don't just sit and look at your screen and always remain curious. Don't ever be boring.
Yes.
And just don't be dull. I mean, it's an amazing world out there. Just embrace it, celebrate it.
Yeah.
And wow the people who are hopefully going to employ you.
Yeah.
You know, just
that sounds like good advice.
Fuck things up a little bit. I think it's really important to fuck things up and go wrong and not to be scared about that. I think for me,
that's really
important. And be a team player. You know, MB is not about a maverick because you ain't going to fit into the MB way of life.
I always thought everything had to be perfect.
Yeah.
Or else people wouldn't respect what you're doing. But messing it up and then sorting it out.
And obviously,
really
have high appreciation of Nick and I.
Yeah, of course. That's the name.
I guess I was thinking about this question. I was thinking, what would I tell my younger self? And it was just like, well, just grow up.
go to Topshop instead of Burton's.
Exactly. But I think it's like, it's not so serious. You don't have to take everything so seriously. You don't necessarily have to work so hard.
Yeah.
And actually, it's about making connections with other human beings. So that making the tea thing, that going for the drinks, all of that. I was sort of hamstrung by shyness and all of that stuff. So I would say to myself, don't sweat it. Just go with the flow.
And, yeah,
empathy is really good as well. Being kind. I mean, we generally know the next person by the lunchtime on the first day a student's come in through the door.
Yeah, same.
Just because you know they've interacted or they've started to make friends.
Yeah, you can just
and
tell.
They're really good.
Yes.
You know, you just got a feeling for the next person.
Yeah, I agree.
And generally they're bossing us around by week two.
Definitely.
which is what we want.
I respect people who ignore us, so a lot of our design is quiet. I tend to be a bit more let people grow and do their own work, and then I can gently, you're slightly different in your attitude, but I think what I love is that they're able to take on our feedback and not do anything about it and just continue doing what they do because they believe in what they're doing.
Yeah.
And unless we really object, it makes me think, right, no, they are right, that does work. And so I think ours is about a culture of, I hope that we nurture creative talent. I hope that actually what I am is a curator or a host for a sort of a home for... creative, talented, bright human beings.
We have this Polaroid book of work of every single student or person who's ever worked at NB.
Oh, really?
It's such an amazing book and see where people have gone to now.
Yeah.
It's lovely.
Yeah, I like
and,
that.
And people
really
stay friends with us. You know, we still meet up with people that worked with us 25 years ago.
Oh, wow.
Which is great.
Yeah, that's really
nice little club.
Definitely.
And the same with our clients. A lot of our clients have been with us for a long time.
Yeah.
May it continue.
Absolutely. Thank you for coming on the podcast. It's been really good talking to you both.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Thank you.